Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hello, everybody. This is our second broadcast. This is Daniel Stern. I'm the author of the forthcoming book, Swingland, Between the Sheets of the Secretive, Sometimes Messy but Always Adventurous Swinging Lifestyle, which is coming out by Simon & Schuster on October 1st of 2013. And with me today is the esteemed Tony Donnelly. He is a comic book artist. He went to the School of Visual Arts in New York City, after which he worked for a stint in the graphic design division of Marvel Comics. After that, he moved to Hollywood, where he has worked as a storyboard artist and freelance illustrator. And most recently and illustriously, Tony just completed a highly successful Kickstarter campaign for his new series, Albert Einstein Time Mason, and that is created under his Tiny Donkey Studios, which is at tinydonkeystudios.com. Correct, Tony?
That's correct.
Okay. So, full disclosure, Tony and I have known each other for about 10 years now. And
wonderful years.
The honeymoon just doesn't end.
It never does.
And it's sort of interesting, that we're on this call because, we've both known each other's sort of artistic interests for all this time, and basically meaning that I don't understand a thing about comics, and you had no idea I was writing a book. So, I know a little bit about your growing up and everything. What's the earliest you know that you were interested and wanted to be in comic books?
I got my first... Hello, Daniel, by the way.
Hello.
I got my first... I had my consoles out when I was a kid. I think when I was in, the second grade, maybe first grade. So I got some Uncle Scrooge comics and Archie to read in the hospital. So that's the first time I really remember paying attention to comics. And then about the fifth grade, I started hanging out with other friends that had, brothers and just huge collections of comic books that were always around. So I would say the fifth grade is when I really started to understand what comic books were and started drawing them myself, that kind of, yeah.
And did you, because the thing with drawing, I can't draw worth anything. I mean, if I can sign my name, that's a good day. But
it is true, Daniel cannot draw.
Yeah. But is it an innate talent that you have and then you nurture it, or is it something that you had to study until you got decent and then you could go from there?
There are certainly some people that have what they call good hands, and they can just draw anything, and I'm certainly not one of those people. It was definitely it's something I have a huge desire to do. I've always wanted to be able to draw, but it's a learned talent. I mean, I really had to study and learn how to draw, and it's a trade. Like anything else, you really have to figure it out unless you're one of those lucky few that can just draw anything. But with comics, there's so much more that goes into it, from storytelling, the pacing, everything like that. It's a learned skill.
Okay. And you actually hinted at something I wanted to talk about. You're saying, there's so much more than just drawing. Because I do know that, you do, you write the stories, the dialogue. I know that you've also done treatments for other series. I remember you had that one, Billy Massachusetts, for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was a while ago. Do you prefer illustrating, writing? But what aspects of the comic books are you most inclined to follow?
For me, it doesn't really come separately, especially if I'm working on my own stuff. It's kind of a whole package. When I start thinking about it, it's the story, and I kind of build the story in my head, and then I'll start, I'll sit down and start to kind of lay it out, how it would go. But as far as, I don't think that I could just sit down and write a story and hand it to someone else. It would probably be gibberish and they wouldn't understand it.
Yeah.
I can certainly, if you wrote a comic book script, I can take that and draw it, but it's not really the way I think about comics. It kind of all comes out of me. So,
okay.
Which is kind of a good and a bad thing. Because then I do everything myself, but that's also kind of a bad thing, because then it takes a lot longer, obviously.
And actually, that response triggered something, another thing that I wanted to ask about, because, you know, I brought up Billy Massachusetts, I brought up Albert Einstein,
right.
Time Mason, but you also
right.
have done commissions, you've done other people's stuff. So, what do you find it more difficult to work on somebody else's, or do you find it more difficult to create and nurture your own ideas to bring into the page?
I don't know if difficult is the right word. Like, it's a lot. There's so much more work that goes into when I just create it myself and everything. But it's a little easier to do because I understand it. I know all the ins and outs, even if it's not all written down. When I get someone else's book, you know, like this last thing I did for a company called Zenoscope, I just wasn't familiar with the characters. You know, I would have to go back and read 30 issues to really understand them. So as far as, like, their acting and posing and their facial expressions and things like that, it's a lot harder to do that because I don't know them. It's like meeting someone for the first time. You don't know how they're going to react to situations, jokes, things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird. It's certainly a lot less time-consuming. But it would be also easier for me, like, if they handed me a Spider-Man story, if I could write it and everything, then it would be simple. But to get another script from another writer.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have that material and you have all that history of the storyline as well.
Yeah, exactly. I know Spider-Man, you know, I could do that. But if you wrote a Spider-Man story, it would be a little bit harder for me to draw it just because I wouldn't know your intentions as well.
Yeah.
Which I would want to convey since you were the writer. So, but yeah, it's a little bit harder.
Okay.
Any of that make sense? Did I stay on topic?
Yeah. For once, you actually stayed on topic. I mean, it's really
unbelievable.
And I kind of want to take that bridge from talking about, you know, you working on somebody else's versus yourself, and bring it, if I could, into Albert Einstein, because I know that started with you, and then you broadened out and you partnered up with Marcus Perry.
Right, correct.
And do you find it more difficult to collaborate with somebody? What was the process like with you two? Because I know he's a story-driven artist.
Right, yeah. Marcus, he's an award-winning director, action short films. He's incredible. So I was really comfortable handing him my baby in Einstein, just because I knew where he comes from. And we've also been friends for a long time, you know, almost as long as you and I.
Means I'm actually insulted you didn't come to me first, but I understand.
You were a little busy with something called Swingland. I don't know what that is yet, but
I'm sure we'll all find out.
Yeah, yeah, it was in your research days. You didn't have a lot of spare time for comic books. it was easy with Marcus. I had hit a point, I did this small 8-pager last year of Albert Einstein to kind of test the waters and see how people responded, and they loved it. And then I got a bunch of freelance work, so I kind of put it to the side. And when I finished up that work, I pulled it out. I wrote a new story that would easily work as its own first issue or, you know, a mini series. And so I just started drawing it because I didn't want to waste time. Well, I just wanted to jump into it. And halfway through, the art was almost finished. I was probably 3/4 of the art finished. And I was trying to dialogue it myself, and I really stalled. I hit a wall, and I was going back and changing things. And I realized that if I kept being so precious with it, that I would never finish it. So I called Marcus. I gave him the artwork and kind of just said, hey, dialogue this. And he loved it. He'd actually helped me last year. With that first 8-pager, I had some interest from production companies immediately about it as a, like, an idea for a TV show or something. And all that, it's Hollywood, so that's going nowhere, I'm sure. But Marcus helped me, polish up the kind of the TV pitch. So he was very familiar with the whole my Einstein universe. So it was easy, is the answer to your question.
Okay. And actually, you're talking about the pitch. I do realize that, you know, because we're so familiar with each other, that there's probably people who will listen to this and go, what the hell is Albert Einstein Time Mason? So do you want to give your pitch for that so everybody can understand what it is?
That's a really good point. We keep talking about Einstein like he's mine. I invented Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein, Time Mason, is my comic book. It's a 5-issue limited series right now, and it's basically, the elevator pitch would be, it's Tom Selleck playing Albert Einstein as Indiana Jones, traveling through time like Doctor Who, all while dressed like Han Solo. So he is it's not your mama's Einstein. He's a young, probably like 35, something like that, ladies' man, good-looking, cool, time-traveling Albert Einstein. So it's a little different than most people.
I think in that description, you hit every sub-demographic of the 18 to 35-year-olds. So
exactly.
So
that
everybody
is not a mistake. It's pretty hard for anyone to look at it and go, well, I don't like all those things. Or if you don't like all of them, at least like two or three of them.
Everybody loves a mustache.
Everyone loves a mustache. You really can't go wrong.
Exactly. And you know, just because I'm a writer, so the storyline is if I understand correctly, he has been summoned by this group who are protecting the space-time continuum.
Correct. Yeah, the time.
It isn't just, you know, this ravishingly good-looking, intelligent guy jumping around. He actually has a mission. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
One thing
he's kind of like part of the group.
Yeah, it was sort of like on your Kickstarter video, you talked about it had similarities to Quantum Leap.
Right. Well, that would be the episodic nature of it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't, the whole story, I'm not even really terribly familiar with Quantum Leap, but he was kind of stuck traveling through time, if that's right.
Yeah, he was trying to get his way out.
He couldn't go home. Yeah, he was trying to get his way out. Einstein's basically going back in all the time. He has he has kind of a home base in under Princeton University, 1933, is kind of where he operates out of. So he travels from there, and he's got his little group of his valet, his bodyguard, his secretary. And the time, each kind of dimension has its own Time Mason. So he's that dimension's Time Mason, and through the rest of the series, we'll see other Time Masons, whether they're Einsteins from other dimensions or, you know, Tesla will probably show up as a Time Mason, that kind of stuff.
And, you know, hearing, you know, all of what you've been talking about with this series and comic books, and, you know, a lot of people are probably wondering, well, why is a guy who wrote a book about swingers talking about science fiction and comic books?
Mustaches,
exactly. There's actually a parallel that I see is that, you know, we're both dealing with nonfiction aspects. You're fictionalizing, but staying true. Like, you know, for instance, he's under Princeton, right? That's where Einstein taught in real life, correct?
Correct. Yeah, once he moved to the States, he was.
So did you find that the nonfiction aspects of what you were creating hindered you or helped you?
No, I mean, I'm pretty much, actually it did hinder me a lot in the beginning because at 35, Einstein was already married with kids. You know, so I was originally going to have it be our Einstein, like our this dimension's Einstein, but I kind of had to tweak that a little because I really didn't want him, you know, traveling through time, being a ladies' man while he had a wife and kids at home. It was kind of like jumping the shark already if he was married with kids.
Yeah.
So his wife, Maleva, is going to actually show up in our series later on, and it'll explain how they kind of split up before you know, all the kids and everything happened, and so she'll be a love interest later on. But so yeah, it actually did get in the way a little bit, and then the Princeton thing kind of just, it made sense for him to be a home base, so that helped me, you know, for him to actually, he still teaches at Princeton in my book. There's a couple pages where he's, you know, going to teach his physics class and stuff like that. So it kind of worked both ways, but it was hard to get around some aspects of his life. And I wanted to keep it fairly consistent with the Einstein everyone knows, just so that we all had an easy entry point into understanding who this was.
Yeah. Okay. So,
and
how
much of your book is going to be fiction?
the fictional aspect are the everyone's name in it.
I love it.
But, you know, I interested in knowing, because the first broadcast that I did was with a friend of mine who I'd known actually longer than you, and he's a published writer. And
right.
He had talked about his response when I had said, hey, do you mind taking a look at something I wrote? And he thought it was going to be some, you know, oh, here's my life growing up. And when he
right.
read first chapter, he was just shocked. But what's different is that you were one of the very few people who I sort of let into that world, meaning I told you about it.
Right, yeah,
so
yeah.
When did I don't think I ever told you that I was actually writing something, did I?
Not in the beginning, but I don't know if you had started the book yet or if you had plans to write it down. I don't, you definitely didn't tell me that in the beginning. I just was aware of your exploits.
Yes.
I was a confidant for you in holy cow, that sounds awesome.
And but I you know, I do understand now that there's, you know, a lot, especially with people that knew nothing about it, they'll come up to me and they'll say, so this is a novel. And I'll say, no, it's not.
No, I mean, no, yeah.
What? What is that? And I think your reaction when I told you, I think I told you after the book had sold, and I think I sent you a text or something like that. But
I knew that you were writing a book.
Okay.
You had told me, yeah, because you had different like revisions of it and stuff before. But yeah, when you told me it was sold, that was a huge deal. That's when I really knew that it was a full book, like finished.
not just like in your head.
Yeah, well, we're all writing books in our head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think I was driving you to the airport, or did I pick you up from the airport when it sold? We were in
no,
my car.
I
remember that.
It sold. I was actually at your bar, Rock and Riley's, and I got a call from an agent who said that it had sold, and I didn't know what to do because I had never done that before.
No, I understand that.
So it was a little different. Cool. Well, I just want everybody to, you know, go buy Swingland when it's out, but then also go to tinydonkeystudios.com. You can see some of the artwork for Albert Einstein, Time Mason, and I know you're finishing up all the Kickstarter stuff that you have to get out there. So when will, for people who weren't part of that Kickstarter campaign, when will they be able to purchase an issue of Albert Einstein?
The book will be, I sent it off to the printer today, so I should have it next Wednesday. And you will be able to buy it off the website after that. I'll have a link to a shopping cart and all that stuff. You'll be able to buy the book from tinydonkeystudios.com. And it's having an official release at New York Comic Con this year, which is...
Is that in October?
Yeah, it's October 12th, 13th, and 14th, I believe.
So all the East Coasters better be okay.
Yeah, I better see a lot. And I printed up a lot. It was pretty successful. We funded 440% or something on Kickstarter. So, and that was a huge surprise to me. So I think
we should mention that your original amount you were after, you actually funded that in less than 24 hours. So everything from day two on was just gravy.
Yeah, it was really well received. So I'm really looking forward to the actual public, you know, being at a convention and handing people the book and seeing how they react. So far, it's been incredibly positive.
Well, you must remember all of your friends when you're big and famous.
I certainly will. All my novelist friends.
Exactly.
You and I don't have to talk to any of our friends anymore now that we're just published and famous. It's going to be easy.
Wait, I, friends? Who are these people? What?
Yeah,
I don't
who are these people them. Anyway?
All right, so there it is. There is Tony Donnelly of Tiny Donkey Studios, Albert Einstein, Time Mason, and Daniel Stern for Swingland, coming out October 1st. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Tony, for coming on.
You got it. Thanks, Daniel.
left you on a debris. Sunday morning market, she was starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door, and that old familiar love song. Cause you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money, and I wonder what you would have done.